What if you could be a superhero? Dave here from DC On Screen. If you love this show and you want to see it continue and thrive, please be sure to visit iTunes or Stitcher and leave us a 5-star written review. The process is faster than a speeding bullet. You don't even have to wear tights or a cape. I mean, you can, if you're into that kind of thing. No judgment. What's important is that you tell the world what you like about the show and why you think they should be listening too. It really does go a long way in helping our show grow and expand, pushing us into more people's eye and ear holes. That was a weird way to put that. By the way, leaving a 5-star written review gets you entered into a drawing to win a free DC trade paperback DVD or Blu-ray valued at $15 or less. 1 in 10 will win and will be chosen through a true number generator on random.org. Think of it as our version of that antiquated sexist moment where the superhero saves the girl and she gives him a little jaw sugar. Alright, begging is over. Time for a brand new episode of DC On Screen. Welcome into DC On Screen number 297. Oh man, we've done so many. This is our weekly DC TV news episode. I am your host, David C. Robertson, and I have a desperate, sick need to purchase attractively designed box sets, even of stuff I don't want or already own. This is my co-host, Jason Goss.
Hey. Yeah, you waste a lot of money on that.
Do you have any weird purchasing sicknesses? I know we're both partial to the color blue.
Sure, yeah.
What are they? Just blue stuff?
Yeah, that's really about it. I'm actually slightly more responsible than my impulsivity would imply.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm pretty good about not doing it. Like I've wanted that like sweet Harry Potter collection forever. That's in the box set with the, I don't even know what the hell it shows. I really don't. Maybe it's Hogwarts in winter. I don't know. I don't know what the box set is.
You have no idea. You've never watched the damn things.
These are the books, and I have like the first 4 books, and I've never read them.
Mm.
But the it's like the first 7 books, and now they have that damn 8th book and some sort of a Fantastic Beast thing. So, you know, the only thing that's keeping me from buying the box set is knowing that it's not complete. But the box set is blue.
That hurts
and
me a lot.
It's very
too, yeah.
It's very pretty. It's very pretty. It's like blue with like snow. And I see it every time I go into any kind of bookstore. Now, as you know, I already own all of Star Trek on DVD. And I just went over to Amazon. I was alerted to it from Ain't It Cool News. And they said, oh, cheapest Star Trek on Blu-ray ever. And I was like, you're shitting me. And I just decided to go over and check it out. And they had the complete original series for like $35 on Blu-ray. And it's this pretty blue case that's like it shimmers.
Oh,
it's like got
it does.
Like almost like a hologram blue type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got like the blue, red, and yellow, or the blue, red, and gold coming out of the nacelles as the Enterprise warps around a silver Federation Delta.
Mm.
It's on its way to my house.
Oh, I was gonna say that was hard for you. I didn't know how that story ended, but okay, that makes sense.
I think I could have probably said no, except that it was blue. It was just too much for me.
You know,
it was too many things that I love.
Something that I do stop myself a lot, like a lot. My Amazon wish lists are full and get depleted very slowly. But you know those Nero Wolfe books I keep trying to shove down your throat? Every time I see one of those in a secondhand store, that shit goes home with me.
Yeah, I feel you. Like, they've just now recently started putting out, like, the really nice little box sets of The Twilight Zone on DVD, and, like, they have a DVD box set of the complete series that's, like, slim-cased, and, of course, like, 10 years ago, I bought, like, the complete collection on DVD. I'm looking at it right now, but it's, like, the thick cases, and I love the case for it. I love it. But I also love the case for the other one, the new one that just came out. And I want, and I, but you know, if I'm
you
like,
want a mistress.
If I would buy it, yeah, a little bit. But you know, at the same time, I was say, if I'm going to buy this again, it's going to be on Blu-ray. It's going to be on HD. I'm not going to buy another DVD box set of The Twilight Zone.
I'm going to see every waft of Serling smoke when he pitches those things at the end.
Oasis cigarettes.
Yeah.
I even know what brand, guys. What up? But.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah, it's a sickness. I love a good box set, especially if it's blue.
You do. You have an impressive little wall.
I do. First off, starting off with Gotham. Talking about Star Trek again. Cameron Monaghan recently interviewed with Backstage.com about his acting career, when he got his start, and some of the stuff that he wished had gone differently, and most importantly, how he approaches the soon-to-be-returned Jerome Valeska on Gotham. He was asked, "What has your current role as Jerome Valeska on Gotham taught you about your acting?" He says, "It's definitely been an amalgamation of everything I've learned from every other job. It takes a constant awareness. He's extremely intelligent. He's extremely on top of every situation. And he's constantly one step ahead of all the other characters. That required projecting a sense of confidence and ease and awareness. It's a presentness that's key to engaging the role. I spent pretty much the entirety of the time on set being in character and doing nothing but just focusing on the scenes themselves. There was no idle chit-chat. I found it required that level."
I kind of believe it watching the guy.
Right? Of course, I kind of want to tell him, dude, it's not even as hard as that. You would make us happy if you just said, "I just watched Mark Hamill."
You still have to be able to accurately, like, do it.
Right.
You can't just watch Mark Hamill and go, "Yeah, I've got this."
I mean, if you can, awesome. You can. Yeah. If you can, yeah, good for you. If you're...
Exposé is reporting that Ben McKenzie will make his directorial debut on an upcoming episode of Gotham. Talking about it, he said, "It was a little bit odd. What was interesting was sort of how much I didn't know that I knew until I actually got there. It was like, oh, I know the answer to that question because I've sat here for 3 years from a different perspective. Everybody has to say yes to you. It was really, really fun." That doesn't sound good. "I really enjoyed it." I'm sure you did, Ben.
Right.
"We have an amazing cast, so being able to work with them in that way was really fun." That just didn't sound right. I'm sorry. I should have said that.
You got to imagine, like, his episode is going to be 85% snarl.
Right. I would just be like, you know, I don't know. I halfway suspect his episode will be like the episode where he and Lee get back together. It's just, it's like, why is Jim Gordon doing nothing but laying in bed this entire episode? Well, he was directing, so he had to find somebody else to do the action. He needed an excuse for why he wasn't. Yeah, right. Anyway. Cameron Bicondova talked to Cinema Blend about when the fans of Gotham might be able to expect Selina Kyle to start making the transition to Catwoman. She said, "Especially after this next episode airs, episode 13, I think she's actually going to believe in herself, and she's actually going to believe that she's a strong, independent person. I think she's always said that to make herself feel better and make it easier for her to live and survive. But after instances that are going to be occurring in her life soon, I think they're actually going to force her to actually believe that she is this strong, independent young lady instead of just telling herself that. I think that's one step she's going to be taking to become Catwoman."
Now, when she says is going to air, that will have aired by now.
Yes. One, so two.
It's smile like you mean it. I just looked that up. I think that's next. That's what will have aired on the 23rd. Yeah. So
that was four actualies.
Four actualies.
What the hell, Cameron?
So we can trust it.
Did I say Cameron before?
You know, you might have, actually, now that I think about it.
Carmen. Sorry. Carmen Bicondova.
Yeah. Long history Bicondova. Of getting names wrong.
There's a precedence, guys. Well,
yeah, we, you know, we try.
Right.
You know how many names there are in the world? Damn it, people.
And they're all so hard to pronounce.
Somewhere less than 8 billion.
And they're all so hard to pronounce.
Duplicates in there, but... Yeah, the
so
that's actually getting around to Catwoman a little earlier than I thought. But
yeah. Well, I mean, I thought she was pretty much Catwoman to begin with. I mean,
she's had the vibe down. Like, I don't know what they mean by get her an outfit, get her a mission, because that would be, I think, what you change is, like, do you put her in a costume? Do you give her a specific mission, or do you have her name herself?
Well, no. They have to be careful, because so much of Catwoman is the raw sexuality of the character,
it would be weird now. It would be
weird.
Which
is creepy if you're talking about a little kid.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these two, it's like their first relationship. We're not into that yet.
Like, I would just feel weird if she showed up in, like, a skin-tight outfit with, like, the zipper all the way down to her belly button.
You should feel weird. You know, you should feel weird if that happened.
I don't need that. Come on, guys. What the hell?
Yeah. I don't think they'll go that way with it, but maybe they give her, like, you know, a Robin Hood kind of storyline going on, or
right.
Some version of the costume. I assume with her it'll be black, not purple. But
Yeah. They'd be like, well, we wouldn't do that. I'm like, okay, good. Thank you, Gotham writers. Unless it came out that she was secretly Bruce's sister.
Why?
All right.
Here's how I'm gonna lay my bet, though, is they do. They make her... I'm just going to throw it down in case it sticks. They give her like a, you know, rob from the rich, give it to the poor thing.
Sure.
Someone finally sights her, notices that it's a girl. Right. And the press starts calling her Catwoman.
Okay. Does she tell bad guys you have failed this kitty?
Please, God. Dear God. Gotham, we've made fun of you with me in a cartoon here and there, but if you do that, it'll be worth it. No judgment.
Oh, man. So, sorry. I hate to laugh so much at my own joke, but it was good.
It was fun.
Anyway, Gotham EP John Stevens spoke to Screener TV about the future of Gordon and Falcone. After the Jerome storyline plays out, he says, we play that in two different ways. We play it very directly and heavy in the first episode when we come back with the storyline between Jim and Falcone. The repercussions of the killing of Mario actually are through the end of the year. It's going to be sad. What? Sad?
Something sad is apparently imminent.
Ooh.
That's what I got out of that.
Hopefully that's not just like John Stevens giving up on the show. Yeah, it's going to be sad. It's pathetic. It's such a bad thing show.
Fucking dry. Terrible.
This cow is going to be shriveled, my friends.
Yeah. All right, so you can't kill him outright. There's no hit on him. Yeah, maybe he just decides he's going to kind of do the same thing they're doing to Penguin right now. Take away everything else.
Right. Right. Oh, man. Corey Michael Smith recently spoke with Cinema Blend about his Riddler transformation and the costume he'll be donning. He said, the role is performative, not in a Jim Carrey way. He's quick to point that out. Damn. I want him to be kind of showy. Well, that just sounds like Jim Carrey. So what we have as the Riddler costume.
Kind of showy, not extremely showy.
Right. So what we have is the Riddler costume is really classy, and that's kind of what we wanted. So they already have a Riddler costume. Badass. Yeah. All right.
I think it's just going to be like a vest with a, you know, question mark. Like a three-piece suit, vest, question marks, placed well. Maybe a nice hat.
You bum me out, man. You bum me out. I thought it was going to be cooler than that.
It's just what I've got, you know, thinking about how Gotham's done some of their costumes in the past. That's just what I've got right now, visually.
He added, to give you some inside scoop, I do not have a cane yet. But I want one so badly for a few different reasons. I won't tell you all of them, so I don't spoil anything, but I'm pitching very hard for a cane. Plus, we do have somewhere to go and add some stuff. So maybe in the future, there will be a cane. But I want him to be someone who deserves a fucking cane. He needs to be someone that's just begging for a cane. What is wrong with this guy?
I don't know, but I like his passion. I like how much he wants that cane.
For a cane. You know what it reminds me of? The episode of News Radio where Bill gets a cane, or Phil Hartman, the great Phil Hartman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my.
I recall this one.
And he has like a whole, like his cane is gone, and he's looking around. He's like, let's see, I walked in. 1, 2, 3, tap, tap, tap. Because he keeps tapping his cane when he walks in. It's just stupid. It's awesome. Mm-hmm.
That was a good one. Anyway. It was a good bit.
So no iconic cane yet, but asked about the presence of question marks, he insisted, oh yeah, we're there. What? I'm sorry, man, that Corey Michael Smith bit where he's just talking about the cane is
just too much.
Why do you need
want him to be a guy who needs a fucking cane? I would love to see a bit where he walks in with a cane and sees Penguin and he's got his cane and like does some nice kind of reveal where Penguin walks around a corner and he's there and Penguin's all you and Enigma like makes fun of him for having a cane and then you know, blithely picks his up and strolls with perfect gait and looks at his leg like, you can't do that, can you? Mine's just for
well,
show.
Damn it! Now I want you to write for Gotham.
We just have fun, you know, pitching things.
Right. I suspect if we actually wrote a thing as far as Batman, Gotham, whatever, any of these shows are concerned, we would be the only ones amused. Like, we would be just, like, howling at our own shit, and everyone would be like, what was the point of that? Just,
oh, yeah. 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 No, I'd bet on that.
Penguin and Riddler just quoted Nerowulf for 2 hours.
Yeah. Money on the table for that, yeah.
So TV Insider has released some photos of the new and resurrected Jerome, complete with costume changes and giant scars. Monahan said of the new look, "I really can't wait for people to see it. We have a few different looks for him. It looks really great. Our makeup special effects designer, Mike Maddie, did a phenomenal job. I've seen the pictures. It looks creepy."
It does. And he looks like he's having just as much fun as I'd hope he does.
Yeah. I actually look forward to the end of the show so I can watch Gotham and be like, yep, there he is.
Yeah, I can't till tomorrow. It's sad.
Yeah, I probably won't for another 6 days. Or however long.
I have to sleep.
Yeah. Well, we're getting all the shows back, so I really do probably need to get to that.
Mm-hmm. Tonight-ish. Knock out what you can, man.
Tonight-ish or tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
On to Lucifer. God Johnson has been cast.
Still a funny name.
It is.
It begs to be religious porn.
Right. And, you know, what? I agreed to that way too quickly. And then, like, I was like, wait, Dave, don't agree to that yet.
No, it's not East Girl porn. You know it is.
I don't want to know what you're talking about. And
I'm speculating, sir. I have no idea.
We have previously reported that Lucifer planned on bringing in a God Johnson, whom they described as an older, charming psychiatric patient. They seem to have found their man in Timothy Omundson, best known for his role in Psych. He was also in Gallivant. And I mentioned Gallivant because my girlfriend loves Gallivant. And I've never seen it, but apparently it was amazing.
I think they just hired him for his facial game.
Really?
I mean, have you seen this man's whiskers?
No.
It's special.
I didn't look at it.
It's special.
Did you see Gallivant at all?
No. Not a clue what they're talking about there.
She, it was sort of a musical. It was like a musical type of, I think it was like a medieval type of situation. But they would do like a thing where they had like, they would introduce like well-known actors as like the head of all these armies.
Mm-hmm.
Like every week they were dealing with a different kind of like, a different culture or whatever, and like there'd be like the king or whatever, and it'd be like a different, you know, pretty high ranking actor. And then for like the finale, they had like a big war, but it was like also a musical. So the show was a musical, and they had like a whole song about like how they could either afford the kings of all these places or they could afford armies. So they just chose the armies because they couldn't afford the money. It was like a fourth wall breaking show. Apparently, it was really good,
mm-hmm.
and they just pointed out very, very efficiently that, by the way, we couldn't afford to have all these people return, so here are armies.
Very nice.
Right? That's how I understood it. I don't know. I didn't watch it. This was all secondhand.
First I'm hearing of it, but...
Right? I mean, it was canceled, but 2 seasons. Apparently it's really good.
Okay.
Oh, man. So we meant to talk about this last week. It was on our list, and we got distracted, and I skipped over it or something because I'm stupid. Rick Cosnett announced via Twitter that he will be making a return to The Flash. Apparently, there's no word yet really on which version or character or timeline he might be appearing in.
Mm-hmm. Which is how on news happens in The Flash these days. Same thing happened with Robbie Mell last week. Like, he's there. No. Don't know how.
On Squadcast, though, Tim said he saw a listing on IMDb that was like a super spoiler.
Ooh.
For what Rick Cosnett was playing, but he wouldn't say what it was, and that now it's been taken down.
Mm. IMDb does that every now and then if you catch him at just the right time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, you know, I don't want to speculate too hard and fast here, but that sounds like a Savitar to me.
Could be. Could very well be.
Could be. I don't know, because Tim didn't say.
I like that, Tim. I respect that.
Tim, you can just slip it to me, you know. I won't ask. But I won't be angry if you
slip
it.
They make private messages for a reason, though, apparently. I prefer to keep some magic, so
right.
If it was worth taking off IMDb, I'll learn about it like the regular people.
Yeah, man. Come on, Tim. Give me that D. M.
Direct message again?
Yes.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
That's right. You got it. Flash EP Aaron Helbig told Entertainment Weekly that the arrival of Gypsy, another Viber, will force Cisco to up his game. He says we're going to see Cisco really realize what he can do. Gypsy is a very formidable adversary. He never realized the extent of his powers, and because of seeing Gypsy, he's going to become more and more in tune with his powers and what he can do. Whether it's crossing dimensions or opening breaches much faster and quicker, he's going to be building confidence, and that'll definitely play into the rest of the season of helping Barry and the team stop Savitar from killing Iris.
Very nice.
Sounds cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've been waiting for a long time. I felt rewarded enough with this season. Mm-hmm. Like, so far with what he can do. Yeah. Hearing that he's about to up the ante makes me very excited.
Sorry. My boss just messaged me on Facebook with a picture of a baby Superman and a baby Batman. Like two toddlers in Batman and Superman outfits, and it says some serious shit is about to go down. Looks like they're about to fight.
Well done.
Alrighty.
Somebody did the same two like 4-month-old puppies back around this time last year.
Yeah.
Fight of the century. There's puppers.
So Aram Helbig gave TV Line a preview of what to expect on The Flash this year. TV Line asked him if we could expect an answer to why Barry could see Savitar and Joe couldn't. He said, yes, we'll reveal the why of that. And it's going to be a pretty big reveal. There's a reason why Barry could see him in that moment and no one else could. Asked about how Julian and Barry will interact going forward, he said, I would say they're conflict-free. The thing about Team Flash is they're willing to always give people the benefit of the doubt and give people a second chance. They're very big on people making amends for their past mistakes. I mean, we know Barry's made a ton of past mistakes. Cisco's made some mistakes. He doesn't say ton. I almost said ton. He just said Cisco's made some mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin's made some mistakes. So I think Barry will take the same attitude toward Julian that he takes with any of his other friends. Julian was overtaken by Savitar. He wasn't 100% here, but he feels culpable, so he wants to make amends.
Makes sense.
I hope that Julian is a good guy from here on out. I like the character.
Yeah. Yeah, he grew on me. Man, I like their antagonistic thing early on, but how long could that last? And now that they're friends, as long as they kind of... I kind of want them to be friends, but keep that, like, antagonistic back and forth a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, smile when you say that, partner kind of deal.
Oh, shit. What if they do, and they probably won't, but because he's already been revealed as alchemy and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But what if he is Barry's twin as well?
I don't see how that'd be possible.
I don't either. But, they could do the whole, I'm just rooting so hard for, what was his name? God, I've said it so many times and now I can't remember it.
I don't know. Tell me his name. I'll help you remember.
That's the problem. I can't remember the name.
And we go back.
It's Barry. Yeah, it's Barry's twin brother who's the Thawn. He got separated at birth.
Oh, Cobalt? I want to say.
Cobalt Blue. That was his name.
Yeah, you've been wanting Cobalt Blue the whole time.
I've been hollering for it the whole time. Now I can't remember the name. But yeah, Cobalt Blue.
I want something a little bit deeper. I want it to be like his meta power somehow. And he wasn't, in the vicinity. But we've also kind of learned that some people have him for different reasons. His meta power is like being able to channel people.
Yeah.
So he finds like a golden helmet somewhere and he can channel it.
Right. A golden helmet somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Very specific helmet. Hell, I'd be okay if you channeled Boston Brand, for God's sake.
Right.
Fine.
I'm not even making sense anymore. It's just like I see a random kid on the street on an episode of The Flash, and I'm like, Cobalt Blue!
Kid was wearing a blue shirt with black edges. It's meant to be.
It's Cobalt! They write Barry a little off for one episode. I'm like, I bet it's not him. I bet it's Cobalt.
Mm.
Anyway. Aram Helbig, he's been very busy this week. He got another extended interview, this time with TV Guide, that's worth checking out. But here are some of the highlights. He talked about the upcoming Black Racer appearance, saying, the thing about the Black Flash is he has the ability to essentially kill the Flash, and that he sucks all his energy and life force the way the Time Wraith did. He's going to be a formidable adversary for Barry, but he's also going to teach Barry a lesson, and that's going to help Barry realize what he needs to do to save Iris. Ooh, that's a little telling.
Yeah, just in what Helbing did this week alone, I feel like if we got out the yarn and the pushboard pins,
right,
we could probably figure some of this out.
right? Question style.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Right. I want the Lincoln, conspiracy board.
Linking NSYNC to, you know, the Illuminati.
Yeah. But it felt like he brought up a lot of...
Aglets. It's the plastic casings, just the plastic casings on the end of the shoelaces, but their true purpose is sinister.
Right. It was always a great line. Yeah, I felt like there were some good hints out of him this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. About Caitlin's possible transition to Killer Frost, he said she's going to continue to do whatever it takes. So seek out help from her. To seek out help from friends. We saw her seek out help from her mother, and that didn't really help her in the long run. It's something that she'll grapple with for the rest of the season. Hopefully she can find a cure. We're watching a tragic story unfold. Dude, you're just like spoiling everything, aren't you?
I get, and everything he's saying, like, it's not really enough that you know what's going on, but you know there's something really cool coming.
Yeah. Yeah, and about Iris and how the news of her death will deeply affect her character, she said, oh, she's devastated. She's now facing her mortality. She knows the end date, and that's terrifying. But now that she has an end date, that kind of emboldens her through the rest of the season, because I know when I'm supposed to die, so I'm not going to die until that point. That's going to cause some friction between Iris and the rest of the team. That's a cool way of handling it, though.
No, yeah, just walking out in the middle of the street.
Right. Like, no, I can totally go face, you know...
I'm gonna rob a bank! Yeah.
Plump Chunk, or whatever name that Cisco's given guy.
Yeah.
Or girl, who's fighting, you know, the team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can go totally handle this, because I'm not gonna die until this day.
What, is Darkseid's here this week? Yeah, I got this, don't worry.
Right?
Y'all lock yourselves away, I can take care of it.
Like, so, you know, and at that point, she can be like, so Barry, I have a few things I want to try. Please don't judge. Here are a number of drugs and or sexual positions I have thought about trying in my past, but I was a little scared that I might die from the experience.
You know, you think you got a whole lifetime to confront these things, and well, I don't. I got about 4 months, so we're going to be busy.
We're going to be a little busy, and now that I have assurance that these things are going to kill me,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Actually, that's a good point. I would stop paying my health insurance immediately. Just save that money.
For what?
It's like a couple hundred bucks a month you can go splurge something on.
I guess.
Like the aforementioned
drugs. Be something lame like horseback riding. Right. Yeah, okay. Where? Well, you know, one of those like pre-made paths. Though, like, the tour guide stands there and, like, watches you. Like, I don't want to do that.
Well, I would start that way, but then about 5 minutes in, I would maniacally laugh at the tour guide and, you know, turn into the woods.
Like, if you look to your left, you'll see where some horny teenagers scrawled their initials into a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Woo boy! Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of Kevin Smith stuff this week, so buckle in, guys. Kevin Smith did a pretty in-depth interview with IGN recently about his experiences on Supergirl and the Flash guest directing. About the cumulative experience, he said early on when they made the move to Vancouver in Supergirl season 2, and I was up there doing my second episode of The Flash, not appearance, I said I'd love to. So it finally came around and I was able to do it. And I was a little intimidated because when I did my first episode of Flash, it wasn't a typical episode of Flash in as much as there was a lot of running around. Not a lot of special effects because Barry was kind of quasi-dead in that episode and inside the Speed Force. There was a lot of talking in that episode to people in the person of the Speed Force. And not a lot of like, okay, we got to do green screen and do this. So we moved through it briskly, and it was I was kind of in my sweet spot. Supergirl is way more complex. The moment she's in that suit, almost anything she does is a special effect, whether she breathes, whether she looks at something, whether she leaves the room. There's a special effect involved. It's a special effects heavy show. And thank God I did that second episode of The Flash in between the first episode of Flash and the first episode of Supergirl. The second episode of Flash, Killer Frost, was very effects heavy and much more in keeping with what they do in terms of spectacle in an episode. So it was very good training going into Supergirl.
Is this like a Jersey thing? Because like earlier this week we got Affleck saying that like, well, I didn't even know you could do all this stuff. So I got to BVS, then we get to Smith here. He's like, oh, thank God. I would have been so fucking in, like, way in over my head if I hadn't tried that, that, like, Baby Step Flash 2 episode. Is Air from Jersey?
Well, I don't know. Is Affleck from Jersey? I thought he was from Boston.
That's right. He's from Boston. So just a New England thing, maybe?
Same thing, annoying accents.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, guys. We love
it. I actually think it's a pretty charming accent.
Hey, you know what? We can't. I'm not going to say anything about anybody's accents for real. I'm in Alabama.
Yeah, no, we have the nation's worst accents.
And if I didn't try very hard, I'd sound like this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually try that hard anymore. When I was a kid, oh, man, it was bad.
Yeah. All I have to say is thank God I was raised on television. Really minimized it.
Yeah.
Still creeps out, but still, pulled it back a lot.
Yeah. Moving on to Supergirl for reals this time.
Mm.
Kevin Smith told comicbook.com recently that Monday, the episode of Supergirl, that's today, that I directed airs, which is thrilling. I got to Sundance tomorrow and I'm up here for IMDb all week. Come home Tuesday, then a few days after that, I go up to Vancouver again to direct another episode of Supergirl. He went on to add, I fell in love with everybody up there, so it was easy to say, yeah, it takes something special to make you put aside your own shit when you are creative. When you have the ability to make the stories you want to make, it's fun to watch other people's stories. It's just way more fun to make your own. So whenever you put your shit aside, it has to be for something worthwhile. Working on Supergirl is like a month of your life, but I'd give it up in a heartbeat because the last experience I had was so rewarding, and I was so happy with what we did. I like all the people up there, and I believe in the show in a big, bad way. It's incredibly warm, it's just well-made entertainment, and it's got something to it. It's a little nourishing. It's not just fast food. There's always some heart to it. You know, I would be okay, given the last few, and I haven't seen them, but they look bad. I'd be okay if Kevin Smith, given his last few movies, would just do this. Like, I don't know. I haven't seen the last few movies.
I haven't seen them at all. I was recently just watching the Viewisk Universe, and I still haven't, you know, expanded past that.
Yeah.
That would be fine with me. He's doing a great job with what he's doing here.
Have you been watching the Viewisk Universe stuff?
Yeah.
Actually, again?
Yeah.
Huh. You didn't tell me about that.
Yeah, me and the wife went through it. You know what's weird, though? It's hard to find Clerks 2 and Dogma. It's like hard to... I have to buy a physical copy. I can't just like rent that on Amazon somewhere.
I mean, you don't have to. I can lend you my copies.
Just mail me your copies real quick and we can knock those out.
I mean...
It'd be awesome. I can
get them to without even mailing, probably.
That'd be actually much safer, too. You know, yeah. Did it ever strike you, though, when Smith is so exuberant about like, oh, man, I loved everybody there and like... I'm a cynical enough guy that I'm like, come on, everybody. There wasn't like one guy where you're like, right. Chad, you dick, I saw you steal that guy's coffee.
Right. You dick, you're just whistling and walking in circles while we're all working our asses off.
You've taken 4 freaking smoke breaks this hour, man. Get in here and do some work.
Stop mentioning your Asian wife. We don't think you're not a racist. We know. We heard those jokes. We heard you say those jokes at lunch.
There's just got to be like one guy. I hate to even think that because Kevin Smith just sounds so damn happy with everybody, and I hate to like rain on a parade. But some part of me's right. Like, come on, everybody, man, like everybody.
Yeah,
but I'm glad he liked enough people that he's excited about doing more of these things.
Yeah. Variety is reporting a few more details about the upcoming Supergirl and Flash musical crossover. Apparently, much like The Invasion, it will begin in the final moments of Supergirl and take place largely on The Flash.
That's a little bit of a boo.
Yeah, people didn't like that, guys. Mm-mm. Stop doing that shit. Mm-hmm. So this will be March 20th and 21st. It will be directed by Dermot Downes and will include performances by Grant Gustin, Melissa Benoist, Jesse L. Martin, Victor Garber, Carlos Valdez, Jeremy Jordan, and John Barrowman. David Harwood and Chris Wood will appear but will not be singing. For some quick history on their qualifications, Grant Gustin and Melissa Benoist are Glee alums. Garber was part of the original Sweeney Todd and Assassin's cast and has 4 Tony nominations. Martin, originally the voice of Tom Collins on Rent and makes a great lounge singer. Jordan starred in Smash the last 5 years and got a Tony nomination for his role in Newsies. Barrowman began his acting career in London with Anything Goes, and Valdez was in Broadway's Once. At some point, it actually starts to make the titular character look underqualified. Still no news about whether there will be any original music on either episode. The music maestro for the upcoming Flash Supergirl crossover has been cast as well. It's not Neil Patrick Harris, which I'm pissed about.
Mm-hmm.
Darren Criss of Glee will be popping over to take on that giant crossover cast. The episode will be titled Duet, which is kind of perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know Darren Criss. I didn't watch Glee.
No offense. No offense to him. We just,
Yeah.
NPH originated it. He did a great job. Obviously, we would have hoped. But it didn't work out.
Look, I have never seen an episode of Glee. I'm a huge fan of Joss Whedon. He says that it was his favorite show.
Great.
I still never watched it.
I just never watched it. And it's not even that I'm not a fan of musicals. I don't know, 50-50 on them. If it's a bad one, it's a bad one. If it's a good one, it's a good one. It's great. But I have nothing against them in particular. It's just never thought I was going to watch Glee.
You know, I think it's a little bit of one of those Nirvana Pearl Jam rivalry type of things. Like, I was a fan of Community, so I was never going to watch Glee.
That won't make sense to anyone if you haven't actually watched a lot of Community, but bear with him. Something to what he just said.
Right. And, you know, it's fine. I thought about going back and looking at Glee, but I love Joss Whedon. Don't necessarily trust his taste, like, in actually what he watches. I love what he produces, like, pretty much 9 times out of 10. I'm like, dude, solid job. Here I am. Look at me. Impressed. But then he's like, I really like this show. And I'm like, okay, I'll give Veronica Mars a chance. And I'm like, eh.
I've still been meaning to do that.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get past like the second or third episode, but I just haven't done it yet. It's just so procedural. It's so hard.
I'll try it out this summer, maybe, if I remember it.
It hurts. So about Kara's imminent discovery of the true identity of Guardian, Andrew Kreisberg told Entertainment Weekly, I think that James was right to not tell her. Wow, that's pretty strong. Is Kreisberg behind the voice of Diggle? You can't tell Carr, James.
He's the Diggle consultant.
You can't tell Carr. She'll hate you forever. He pretty accurately guessed her reaction to it. What I think is interesting is while her reaction is explosive, it's also one of concern and love. She loves James and when she does find out, she's worried for her friend's safety. Mikad Brooks also mentioned a TV line that James and Kara will be competing elsewhere. He says, I'm writing my article on how amazing the Guardian is and how he stopped the crime. And Kara's writing her article about Supergirl. We're having a secret war. It's just a little funny scene where both of us are trying to push our agendas. Well, okay, that's cool that you're having a quote-unquote secret war, but secret war is Marvel's.
Isn't that what you thought, too? Come on.
Come on, man.
And that doesn't sound like a secret war. It sounds like a side battle.
Call it a crisis.
Right. We're having a tiny, I don't know, column crisis.
So Kevin Smith wants to direct part of the DC TV crossover. He was talking to comicbook.com. He says, if they ask me, I put in my request to Kreisberg already, dude. After I watched their crossover, I said, please, dude, please, next year, just give me a taste of that crossover. I just want to be
Any
involved
one of
in one of
I'll
them.
I'll finally do an Arrow then. Let me do the Arrow. Let me do the Arrow next time.
I don't care which one. They look like a nightmare to shoot, I'll be honest with you. I did the Killer Frost episode of The Flash right before they went into the crossovers, and the crossover schedule, you're talking about 4 different shows where you're swapping performers and characters and stuff like that. It's a nightmare on all the ADs as they had to try to figure out how to make all this work.
Oh, it absolutely sounds like it, though. It just does.
That, yeah.
Where you're like, well, dude, all right, stay in costume. You're over on the Legends set now. I need you back in 45 for your bit on The Flash. Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I go pee? Help me God, if you pee, I'll kill you. Get in there.
Right. That being said, look at the end results, dude. That was absolutely thrilling to watch all 4 of those shows cross over. I'm asking. I don't know if they'll let me, but believe me, I've already put in the request. I said, whatever it is next season, whatever the crossover is, even if it was the death of Kevin Smith, I want to be involved somehow.
The actual live, for real death of Kevin Smith. Yeah, let me direct it.
Yeah. So, EP Mark Guggenheim talked with Entertainment Weekly.
Quick what? Prop bet. You don't do enough sports to know what a prop bet is, I think.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but go.
Propositional bet, where you do weird shit, like how many times will the announcer say the phrase this, something like that.
Okay.
So for us, our version of that, do you bet that eventually, if Kevin Smith directs enough of these, that he will somehow connect it to the Viewisk universe? That he'll put in a background gag somewhere?
I'm fairly certain he already has.
And
we just haven't
caught it. There's a Blunt Man comic somewhere in the background of one scene.
Right.
But what do you think? Yes or no? Just if you had to pick yes or no, does he do it eventually?
Yeah, I don't think so. Like, maybe like a joke. Maybe as a joke. Maybe a Clerks poster or something. I don't think he'll do like a full-fledged make it a part of the universe type of thing.
Okay. I'm going to go with yes just to be arbitrary, as I often do.
Sure. It's like, I mean, I've seen you try to make business cards. Every time they come out, and despite whatever you put on them, it always says Devil's Advocate on the bottom.
I know.
We are who we are, Dave.
I know what I'm about, son. So Mark Guggenheim of the EP on Arrow is talking to Entertainment Weekly about what the Talia and Nissa dynamic might be with Talia coming into the Arrowverse, which I'm excited about, oddly enough. He said, she's definitely her own person. She's not a Nissa clone by any stretch. You can definitely sense a familial resemblance. Having Ra's al Ghul as your dad is likely to forge a very specific kind of person. They're close enough and different enough that I would love at some point to do a story with Nissa and Talia. He was also asked by why Oliver didn't mention Talia during any of his time with Ra's. He says, we'll also be dealing very directly with the fairly obvious question, which is, wait a second, when Oliver met Ra's al Ghul, why didn't he say, hey, wait a minute, I think I met your daughter back in Russia? Guggenheim says, we have a very specific answer for that. So Guggenheim also says, Russia is very much in the zeitgeist these days, and coming into the back half of the year, we're doing a lot more with Russia. We're going to do a Russia-centric episode. Fun.
Mm-hmm.
A flashback-centric episode, like we did in the first 3 years of the show. We'll be doing that later on in the season, and that will have Dolph Lundgren's character, Konstantin Kovar, very much front and center. He also mentioned that in that episode. Assuming that scheduling works out, because we're still writing this episode, the plan is for Konstantin to have a very... That's Konstantin Kovar, don't freak out. Konstantin Kovar to have a very key meeting with a corrupt American multi-millionaire businessman. Make of that what you will. That sounds like a Trump thing.
It has that, like, I don't know. When you say zeitgeist, that's kind of what we're all thinking about right now a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Wherever you land on it, it's probably in your mind, or at least on your newsfeed.
Right.
I'm excited about the flashback. You know, we mentioned this during season 4. They didn't do a centric, like, island flashback, and we actually appreciated that because the island flashbacks were shit. Mm-hmm. So, but
absolutely,
some of my favorite moments, like season 1 and 2, though, were when they went back and really focused on it for a minute. Those were fantastic episodes.
They were. Like, you could take those, you could just cut those island from the first 2 seasons. You could just take those island flashbacks, put them into their own, like, 13 episode series, and put it on Netflix, and it would be just as good as Daredevil. Oh,
damn right, man. People would still be talking about the shadow scene, you know, the shadow death scene.
Right. Like, no, what?
Yeah.
Not shadow.
Absolutely they would. That'd be amazing.
On to Powerless. There, we have some Powerless updates. New showrunners, Patrick Schumacher. That's not a good sign. Patrick Schumacher, Justin Halpern, gave us some interesting tidbits to The Hollywood Reporter. Among them, the reason for the change from insurance company to security company was, quote, that the insurance company angle wasn't really generating the type of stories that we wanted to be telling. I could have told you that.
Yeah.
After a sit-down with Jeff Johns, DC's fixer of all things DC, it was decided that the Wayne security angle would allow them to, quote, tell classic workplace comedy stories, but in a way that kind of activates the DC universe a little bit more. Expect some Bats Bruce Wayne acknowledgement early on, but not much past it, because, as he said, quote, we make it a point not to use Batman and Bruce Wayne as a crutch. We don't lean into that past the pilot that much. He also mentioned the show will be based in Charm City, a city that will be completely fabricated for the show, and that it will be based on Earth P and not connected to the Berlantiverse or the DCEU or the Fox stuff. They will be making references to the themes of the current movie and TV universes, but, quote, we don't treat the films as things that have happened within this world. Pointing to the major Justice League characters, he said, quote, they're not going to make appearances. They do exist in this world. We reference them all the time. Speaking of the sources for the writing room, he said, the idea is that we're going to pull from the whole canon of the comics. It really is the comics we are pulling from. We really want to show as much of the birth of the DC universe as possible.
That part sounds, you know, rewarding. But
yeah.
Between Charm City and Earth P, it's almost like they stood on the hilltop and said, fuck you, other universes.
Halpern said, we're hesitant to not name drop, just a name drop. We want it to make sense when it happens. We're open to that kind of thing, but we're sort of trying to be careful to not service things the wrong way, which is great. Now, they released a bunch of new promos. You know, I'm on record as having said I thought it looked like garbage. I think it looks a little better now, but not much better. What do you think?
I didn't think it looked that bad to begin with.
I know you didn't, but you have, you know, a low standard.
No, I have, what do I call it?
I'm just kidding, man. I'm just
naive optimism.
Right.
And it's only about things that I just haven't actually seen yet. For the like, I try not to get down on something until I've actually seen the entire product, you know? Like, showing me 30 seconds of a 22-minute pilot, I'm going to try not to judge you. Like, maybe even it's just, you know, like the trailer warehouses or trailer house? What do you call it? The trailer house?
I don't know.
Anyway, you send your whole fucking pilot off and say, hey, make a trailer, and they send back this thing, and you're not in charge of it. So right. I try to give the creators enough credit to just go, look, I'm going to at least watch your pilot before I form a real judgment. But
that's fair.
You know, I kind of thought like it looked half amusing. And now when I watched these last few promos, which, come on, you know, the highlights like Starro, right?
Right.
That's fucking awesome.
Well, I don't know. My favorite was, oddly enough, my favorite joke was the difference in color in the Joker EpiPen. Like, that's what I laughed
that's,
the hardest
that's pretty
at,
good.
Was the initial, like, you know, whatever it was. I don't remember the colors now.
I mean, the Joker EpiPen bit was pretty good anyway. It's you know, if you haven't seen it, it's a little kind of shoot yourself in the thigh pin that stops Joker gas from, you know, rectifying you. Rectifying? Anyway, from giving you the stupid grid and killing you. Rectifying. I like that. Okay, yeah. That's probably right. Right. So it was a good bit, and they play it as a Wayne commercial. What do they call it? Wayne, yeah. It's not Wayne Industries. Whatever this company is all work for. Sorry, we're still getting used to this material, guys. It's a cool idea. And that's where it really hit me, though, is when they showed the commercial. I was like, oh, that's what I want this show to be. I want it to be Better Off Ted.
Yeah.
I really love Better Off Ted.
Well.
And it is.
I mean, I mentioned Better Off Ted last week in reference to it, but it looks like an unfunny DC Comics version of Better Off Ted.
Well, this is, I mean, like, I'm behind this now as, like, no, you've got the working pieces of the show that was just, it was gone. I don't know.
What was the kryptonite glass bit? Did you see that one?
That was actually pretty good. I did not think about that scenario. I just dropped it or something.
Yeah, I had not considered that possibility. Clink.
Actually, the joke that probably, it made me laugh, but I'm betting it was even better on paper. Was I need you to put together the Wonder Woman model? But it's
the invisible plane.
But it's invisible. Yeah. The show may end up being way better than some of the expectations that I don't know we've portrayed. Like Dave, you were down on it last week. I was neutral. This week I'm about the same. You're in better spirits. I think we're probably below the average on expectations for this thing or hopes.
Maybe, yeah. Oddly enough, I enjoyed Alan Tudyk. Oh my God, his bit where the woman walks in and says Bruce Wayne is on the line for you, and he says if you were kidding with me right now, I am going to stuff your pockets with rocks and throw you in the river.
That was good.
And he's like, "How do I look?" She's like, "Look, somebody who doesn't know how to work a phone." That was pretty good.
That was.
Yeah, I was down with that. And I actually enjoyed the thing where Vanessa Hudgens was like, we need to, what are you going to say? Think outside the box? And she's like, no, pretend that there is no box. What are you working on? And the dude goes, I'm literally working on a box. That was pretty good. I had some good chuckles and I feel better about the show. I'm still not completely on board. But it looks a lot better than it did. The Joker EpiPen was my favorite bit, though.
I think minimally right now you're on board with trying it.
Also, I never thought I'd see a live-action Starro in any capacity.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was the big thing, right?
But you know, everybody's saying that's a Green Lantern beam that blasts him.
It sure
Green
looks
Lantern
like
wouldn't blast. Green Lantern wouldn't blast Starro and explode him. He would encase him and fly him out into space.
Sure, probably. Unless you're trying to like focus on the whole these people destroy our city thing.
Sure.
Guy Gardner might.
Guy Gardner might, as played by Joel McHale.
Yeah. Now, maybe it's like Kyle still training, and he was like, I'm going to make a giant thing of dynamite. Oh, that was a bad idea.
Wait, wouldn't that be fun? Guy Gardner, as played by Joel McHale, meeting up with Danny Pudi in Powerless.
Oh, that would be good. Yeah, I could dig that.
Allison Brie for Star Sapphire, just saying. I just really want Community back.
Even if we have to rebuild it on another show.
Yeah. We can have Shirley come back as Amanda Waller. Mm-hmm. We can have... I don't know. John Oliver's Maxwell Lord. I don't know.
We can make this work, people.
Jim Rash's Lex Luthor.
That could work. That could totally work. No, there's a Captain Britain. John Oliver can be that.
Well, Captain Britain was Marvel.
Oh, God. Yeah, you're right. Shit.
That's right.
Damn it. Thwarted again.
Anyway, moving on. We got other things. Mm-hmm.
We'll do our Dreamcast of Powerless as represented by Community some other day. I guarantee you tonight, so I'm gonna wake up tomorrow morning and my first thought is going to be like, Jim Rash should be in blank. Insert here.
Yeah. You know, I could see Jim Rash as the comedian. Not the comedian. What the hell? as the dean on Community, treating Superman like the dean from the other community college.
Oh, yeah, it'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Anyway, so they've announced some actors for Teen Titans: The Judas Contract. They cast RoboCop actor, an actor in Iron Man 3. He was in NCIS Los Angeles, Crossing Jordan. Miguel Ferrer. I don't know how to say that name. How do you say that?
Miguel Ferrer.
Yeah, I remember him from Star Trek. He was in one of the Star Trek movies. But he's Deathstroke in this thing, and he's also been the Weather Wizard in Justice League. Anyway, and Christina Ricci as Tara. But within hours of them announcing that, which he's already recorded his lines, he actually passed away. Miguel Ferrer passed away, complications with cancer. So, you know, he was a voice actor. He did a lot of stuff. Vandal Savage, Sinestro, Martian Manhunter, Aquaman, Weather Wizard, ton of stuff across the DC animated stuff. So that sucks.
There's some up and down news.
Like within hours of them saying that he was going to be in Judas Contract, he died. Mm. So, he's a good actor too. It bummed me out to see that. Lighter news though, Injustice 2 trailer dropped. And it looks like...
You say lighter news.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, in reality, absolutely. Just in tonally.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. So a new trailer for Injustice 2 dropped that gives us some of the plot to the sequel. It looks like some of the characters will be trying to reassert the dominance of Superman. A new faction will develop trying to take advantage of the chaos following the coup, and Batman will be faced with some morally sticky decisions. Also, Brainiac will be masterminding, apparently, the plot. I don't know.
That was pretty much the big reveal, it looked like, was Brainiac's decided that he's going to, toy with everyone.
Yeah. Confirmed newbie characters are now Darkseid, which is... Well, we knew about that, but he's the Stinger, and apparently you need to pre-order to play with him.
Yeah.
Or just purchase a season pass, because he'll most certainly be available there.
He was available previously, but I think it was, like, only iOS...
Yeah,
it was.
Well, I think that was just the Injustice game on iOS.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. On Injustice, I forget what the hell the circumstances were, but you can some people have played with Darkseid before.
Yeah.
So it's not an entirely new experience for some people, but you know, the rest of the world.
But again, that was the iOS Injustice game though, not the console.
Right.
But yeah, apparently you're going to also be able to play with Bane and Poison Ivy and Brainiac. And if you're interested in that, a prequel comic will drop April 11th. Also what's cool is that it looks like you're going to be able to like play different characters through DLC content. Like you're going to be able to like buy skins for Supergirl that'll make her into Power Girl, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, that's neat.
So
that's a neat development.
Yeah.
And real easy. I'm glad they thought of that.
Me too. That's cool though. Like, shit. Man, I wish I had a game system for that, but I just can't justify buying a new game system for one game. I just don't play any games.
I know. You remember when you could go like rent one?
Yes.
I used to do that all the time.
I do. What do you mean, do I remember? I long for those days.
Right. Well, I mean, when the time came in my life where my parents finally said, okay, we can get you one system. Do you want, do you want Sega or do you want SNES? And I looked at the game set that I saw, and with SNES there were a lot more sports games than there were like with Genesis. Yeah. There were a lot more kind of story based games. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, I played sports like a motherfucker, but I really didn't care about like playing them on. Like I wanted to go play on a field. I didn't want to actually play it when I went home. I wanted to go tell stories when I went home. So right. Genesis, but every now and then there'd be a game on SNES that I couldn't get over there, and I'd go like cry and beg and can we please just rent it for the weekend? And yeah, I'd rent it for the weekend and absolutely like consume it. Yeah. You could rent the whole, God, it used to be like $30 for the 2 days, and then you'd have to go rent the game itself for like $4 or $5 or whatever.
Yeah. You know what was weird is like, I remember...
Back in the Blockbuster day.
Yeah, I remember going to Premiere Movie and renting the Avoid the Noid game.
Oh, wow.
You know, it was a video game. I don't remember if it was for, I think it was for Nintendo, I want to say. Maybe for a Sega Genesis. But it was the Noid from the Domino's commercials. Mm-hmm. And I liked Domino's pizza. I liked Domino's and I liked the Noid. And that was a fun game. I don't know why it was so fun to me. I'm sure if I played it now, I'd be like, what the hell was I thinking? But I probably rented that thing like 25 times.
Oh, yeah. There were certain ones I'd rent over and over again.
And I can never get past like stage 3, you know, like the warehouse or whatever that was. But
I never owned a copy of Mortal Kombat, but I've probably played 100 hours of it.
Oh man, I think my first I owned Mortal Kombat 2, 3. I didn't get 4 or Sub-Zero, but I got like all of the PS2 except for Shaolin Monks. I didn't get that one.
No, there was a whole gap where I didn't get a gaming system between Genesis and Xbox.
Yeah.
So I had this giant chunk of years where if I went over to somebody's house and went, you have a console? What do you have? And I'd go catch up on Mortal Kombat. Who are these people? Yeah, she's pretty much made of claws.
Yeah, I loved the Deception and what was the other one? Deadly Alliance, maybe? I don't know. Of Mortal Kombat. Those were like mother's milk. Like I was just like, oh, man. Mortal Kombat's back in a big bad way, and it's so awesome. And Liu Kang's a friggin' zombie, and look at him with his chain hooks. And I was just down for it all.
That's nice. There are certain franchises I always loved, but I never could keep them regularly in my life. So I just kind of zoom in and out of them. And, yeah. I mean, God, like a friend of mine, Michael. I never owned an N64, but we spent so much time in high school that I might as well have.
Right.
So, Metal Gear. Oh my God, Twisted Metal.
Metal Gear Solid.
Twisted. No. Twisted Metal. Twisted Metal 3. Shit.
I think Twisted Metal 2.
2.
You and I have had this conversation. It was 2.
It was 2, and it was Minion and all that. All right. So Twisted Metal 2.
That was on PlayStation. That was
basically Rob Zombie's. Yeah, he had a PlayStation 2, as well.
I mean, this is PlayStation.
He had a PlayStation as well. Yeah.
Okay. Like, I got you.
Twisted Metal 2 on the PlayStation as well, and GoldenEye. On the N64, I could still draw you maps of the levels. Like we just kind of we got absolutely compulsive about this at some point. Like we got to the point where with him and I, we'd put it on proximity mines every now and then, and we knew all the spawn points. So like if you died once, you were done. The first of us that actually got in a shot was you were done. We'd put it on like 10, and then basically every time you spawned, you blew up again.
Right.
it got to the point where we were absolutely deadly.
That's awesome. It's funny. I forget we're doing a podcast sometimes because it feels like I'm just talking to you on the phone.
Yeah, we just
and
chat.
You're like, yeah, a friend of mine, Michael. I'm like, yeah, I know Michael. Why are you acting like I don't know? Oh, yeah, because people that we don't know are listening.
Speaking of which, what other news do we have?
That's it. We're done. That's
damned
all the news.
Our cartridge-ridden gaming past.
That's all the news, buddy. We were gone. We were done.
Okay.
you want to wrap her up? You want to talk about GoldenEye a little bit more?
Oh, man.
I never played it, but I'm down for listening.
Oh, it was deep.
To your ruminations.
It was deep. Oh, the last thing was we had a... there was a... If any of the people that remember it, there was a gun called the Klob that... It was we nicknamed it the suicide gun because in actual gameplay you walked in and you could like spray the room with that thing, but it was true spray and pray. Like you could aim at somebody's head with that thing and just pull the trigger, and it may hit him from like 15 feet, you know, and estimated game yardage. So we called it the suicide gun, but what it made this a lot of fun. There was one One the bunker. It was the library, I think. It was one library. It was the library like setting for multiplayer deathmatch kind of deal. You'd go in there, you put it on License to Kill, which meant one shot, one kill. I mean, if you're hitting the thumb, you're done.
Yeah.
As though you could articulate a thumb on an N64. But it one shot, one kill, and we'd go in there and just do like strafing circles around each other with the club. It was pretty much Russian roulette with like 500 bullets. There was no way of actually guiding a bullet toward the other person. It wouldn't make a damn bit of difference. It was pretty much musket balls. But we just like strafe around in a circle like, until somebody died.
Yeah.
A lot of fun there.
Yeah. You know, and I think you experienced a little bit of this when you and I used to play Call of Duty 2. You know, I'd go hang out with Matt Carroll of MCU Cast when I was in my teens. And we would find our way into playing a video game of some sort. And we'd bring over our buddy Ryan or whatever. And I would play the old, let me just find some place to hide, and I guess I will stay there until you find me and kill me.
Ah, yeah. That old method.
That old chestnut.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like looking at a split screen, and they're like, where are you? And I'm like, I'll never tell. We can't even tell by looking at your segment of the screen. What happened? What did you do?
Yeah.
I'm not good at those games.
It got to be truly impossible that we couldn't tell. I mean, you could do that all day. And we tried it. Our favorite was Pyramid Proximity Mines.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go there, and then you'd try the same thing. You'd crawl up in one of the secret tunnels in the pyramid and like face the wall. And it's the equivalent of in poker when you just put on eyeglasses, a hoodie, and look at the table until someone makes a decision.
Right.
And two things happened. Either you eventually figured out what tunnel they're on because you've seen that weird pattern in the rock on the wall before.
Right.
Or you thought you saw a glimpse of where they might be, or you even, for God's sake, figured out based on the proximity mines they had left that you had seen in time, like where they were. It was deep. Right? You'd sneak up on them somehow. But yeah, that was one of the tricks we'd use, where like you'd plan all the things you needed to be if you could get around the map faster. Plan as fast as you could, hide, wait for the other person to die, run out as fast as you can, and plan everything everywhere else.
Right.
It worked as well as anything else.
Yeah, playing those types of games, like, I just listening to you guys and seeing what you... I've hung out with you and Michael while you're playing Call of Duty and different things, and you guys do similar types of things. And for me, I was always just like, that seems like a lot of work. It's just like in real life. I'm like, that seems like a lot of work. So just go hide somewhere and hope it all goes away.
In our 20s, Michael and I, it was Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. They had a cool thing in there that was like special ops. It was multiplayer missions, like two-person missions, where you both tried to beat a level, which was neat. And, you know, it doesn't get used as not. That method doesn't get used as much as I think it should, because it's nice to be able to like sit in a room with somebody. Not the multiplayer online stuff. I mean, that's great for certain things, but like you wanted to chill in a room with somebody and like go beat something together. That was a really cool option.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, like we beat a lot of those just without having to resort to real tactics, because it is just a game after a while, and you just shoot people. But right. We got to one where it was like you had to beat these things called juggernauts in this tiny little like maze with these, it was weird. It was like it really was kind of a maze feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And these juggernaut things, like you couldn't just shoot them. I mean, you could if you had enough bullets and they just weren't paying attention, but that wasn't they were deadly. And there's like a level they put it on called, I think, high explosives, where all you had was rocket launchers, grenades, and knives, which I know sounds like a lot, but when somebody's running around that much armor, you're, still not dealing with anything. We had to develop, like, a separate language. We had North Corridor, Library, South Corridor, South Healing Space. Like, we had to develop an entire language to actually beat this level.
Wow.
It got weird. It got absolutely weird.
It became an
obsession, though, where the like we knew where they spawned, when they spawned, the patterns there. Like, literally, you got down to the point where, like, when you had to beat 10 of them, and it came in different patterns. And, like, sometimes it'd be one of them in North Corridor. you know, one of them in South Corridor, two in Central, you know, something like that. But it got to the point where, depending on how we killed them, we were already calling it like Pattern B, which meant we knew there were going to be like one in South Corridor, one in North Corridor. It was.
That's ridiculous.
We played that thing probably like a couple hundred times. We were determined to like beat it on the highest level.
And what was this again?
I think it was Modern Warfare 2, Call of Duty.
All right. Yeah. Guys, don't ever play Jason or Michael in Modern Warfare 2.
Absolutely determined to beat those things.
That's ridiculous.
It was.
I would never play a game to that depth, ever. It was. If I was going to exert that much energy, it would be on something like a podcast.
No, it was pure obsession. Pure, unmitigated, uncontrolled, same thing, I guess, obsession.
Right. All right, you want to wrap it up?
Yeah. Hope everyone enjoyed that little video game podcast at the end of this thing.
All right. Yeah. Next thing you know, we'll be on Twitch. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's going to do it for our DCTV episode. We are DC On Screen. You can find every episode on DCOnScreen.com. If you enjoy the show, please remember to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever your favorite podcatcher is. We're proud members of the Giant Size Team Up Network, GiantSizeTeamUp.com. A lot of cool shows over there. Breaking the Panel, Panel by Panel, Booze and Phasers, Marvel Cinematic Universe Podcast with my friend, Matt Carroll. Grew up together, that I just mentioned earlier. We are also members of the Batman Podcast Network. A lot of cool shows over there, including the Suicide Squad cast that we've mentioned probably almost every week. And we will be coming right back next week. Well, I guess we're going to have, you know, what we're going to have on Saturday is a Gotham, Lucifer, Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow. Reviews, as well as our news episodes that are going to be coming up on Tuesday of next week. We are back in the full swing of things. So until next time, guys, keep some DC on your screen.